See, I'm
Thanks.
sorry. I'm distracted. I have a pest crawling across my floor.
That's
I was
great.
listening. I was listening. About halfway through, I started to hear scraping, and then I thought I heard chewing, and I'm like, "What the hell is going on over there?" And that's why
it's that ghost and that dinner jacket, dude.
Don't you start. Don't you start with that. And I'm looking and I'm looking and I'm looking. And I'm thinking, is there a mouse in my room? Like, seriously, I'm an exterminator and there's a mouse in here. And
a mouse in my house.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Damn being realistic.
As the story grows.
Welcome back to As the Story Grows. My name's Trav, and I got Steven back. Steven's back!
Yeah. Sorry about that, everybody.
he got lost. He left his computer in another room of the house, and he couldn't find it.
My GPS took me the wrong way. I couldn't get back.
And we also have a very, very special guest, Bruce Fitzhugh of... what band were you in again?
What was that band?
That one band, yeah.
Yeah, that one band you were in. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being
What's the name of the podcast again? Because I can't. Keeps changing.
As the Story Grows.
And where's that come from?
That's from Sin Disease.
Oh, is it?
Scattered Few.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually got Alan's permission to use it.
I love that record.
Yep.
I legitimately love that record. There was very few there's very few of the late 80s or mid to late 80s, you know, Christian albums that stick around, that have stuck around for me, but that's one of them for sure, hands down.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the quintessential ones for us too. And I found it first, right, Steven?
Yes, you did.
Yes,
I'll give you that.
Let me get that out there. Steven introduced me to a lot of music, but I found Sin Disease first.
But I saw the lineup live, and he didn't.
That's true. All right, shut up. Bruce, man.
I saw him in 1991, and I was in the pit at Cornerstone.
Oh,
so happy.
See, we didn't get to see that. So no, you win.
You win.
The legendary Quarterstone 91. Man.
That was our first year. We didn't go to play. We just went to hang out. We had finished our first record, but it wasn't out yet. Mm-hmm. And nice. So we were walking around and we got recognized by this guy who we're still friends with to this day. His name's Mark Fields. Lives in,
that's my buddy from up in Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah, right outside of Boston. Love that guy. We had gone to Cornerstone. We were camping out. We were just walking, whatever, and this bald guy stops us with this massive goatee, and he's like, are you the dudes in Living Sacrifice? And we're, so young. We're, 18. We're, yeah. And that was just crazy because we didn't even have a record out and we were in Illinois in the middle of nowhere and some guy, recognized us.
That's so cool.
And we've been friends, super good friends with the guy ever since. I love him. He's such a fan of metal and a student of metal. I mean, he would send me these packages with just alternate mastering takes or mixes that he had found from buddies or something like that, and then he'd throw in a whole bunch of punk rock stickers.
Nice.
He was the first one to send me Obey stickers, the Shepherd Fairey stickers, and I remember getting them. I remember getting them in the mail, and it was just all these random stickers. It was what is this Andre the Giant thing? I don't get it. It was just some punk rock sticker. I was just oh, that's Mark. He's punk rock. But, he's also metal, so.
You said you know his band Proclamation that he was in.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yep.
Yeah, they were so good.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm just going to sit back and listen. I don't know any of that. I don't know the band. I don't know this dude. I don't know any of this.
Well, Mark Fields, he's on our list. Yeah, he's on our list of interviews.
Oh, you should absolutely talk to this guy.
He's
phenomenal. He's just a great dude.
Nice.
He filled in and played sang for the band Everdown.
Yeah.
At one of their final last shows before they kind of called it quits in the 90s or whatever. So.
Yeah, I was at that show.
I feel like I knew that. Not by his name, but I feel like I knew there was a stand-in guy.
I saw him at that Everdown show, and I think that's when I first knew of him. But when I finally got to meet him, we went to the very first Striper Expo. It was in 1999.
Oh, yeah.
Here on the East Coast, and it was the first time Striper was going to even be in the same room together and playing together since their big breakup. So we slept in our van. We drove out there to be there. We slept the night before in the van. We were in line, and he was just there. And I remember being like, "Hey, I remember you sang Forever Down." And then we just got to talking, and
he's the best dude.
Yeah,
he's a great dude.
He's a great guy.
And speaking of Striper, how is that new song? Oh my gosh!
I haven't really checked out the newest stuff, but I read that Doug Van Pelt interview on Facebook. I saw you guys were chatting on that, and that interview that review he did made me really interested. So,
they've only released one song, I guess, and it's awesome.
Okay, there you go.
I'm excited. I thought the last one they did was pretty decent.
I thought the last one was really great as well. And this is coming from a guy that hasn't really cared much for them since Soldiers Under Command.
Ooh,
Soldiers! Wow. So you didn't even like the In God We Trust and.
I mean, I did, but the poppier they got, the less I was just like, I was done. I was like, not into pop metal.
Oh, man.
But I still, I knew that they could do it. I knew that they could, do good, just harder edge metal with, great riffs, great guitar playing, all that stuff.
Soldiers Under Command's my favorite album from them. Actually.
Yeah, mine too.
So that makes I Surrender is just so good.
And then the last album.
I just put Shining Star on loop. What? Am I alone on that?
You know that's a cover song, right?
Yes, I know it's a cover song.
Hey, they killed it, dude.
Travis, you're failing.
Bruce, Bruce, I wanted to talk to you. This is a good segue. You're always so freaking serious. What's the deal with you, man? Why are you so serious all the time? Why does Bruce Fitz you have no sense of humor? Go. No, I'm just kidding. I remember that from the...
I do have a sense of humor. It's just super dry, so people don't know what I'm joking.
Hey, that the best wines are super dry. No, I remember I remember meeting you out and about, and I remember you talking on Mark's on Solomon's podcast about how people have that perception of me that I was always really serious, and now I realize that you were just the band dad and busy and concerned about stuff, and in talking to you since then, I was like, this guy's fine. Bruce is just like a normal guy who has his constant obsession with metal and music, and he's just another guy.
Well, I am surprised at the new Striper song, because I mean it's just really good, and it's like it's a metal song.
They're still doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not poppy, and I haven't really listened to much of the other stuff. I except for the last album, I listened to a little bit of that, and I thought that was really good, but I haven't listened to it consistently.
Right.
But anyways, we can move on from that.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree with you.
We never have to move on from Striper. We could talk about Striper.
I think it's time for them to do with the record that they're apparently doing. So I'm excited, for sure.
Definitely.
Awesome.
No more ballads.
No more ballads. So, Bruce, a couple questions, couple stories that I remember and everything, and it's just an organic conversation, just kind of take it in and out of where we're going and everything. But I have to ask. I'm talking to a couple friends that you were coming on, and they were like, "Dude, you got to ask him about the legendary story when you sang Breathing Murder with Crutch." And we gave you that lyric list that was just an entire list of beers, just to see if we could make you laugh. Do you remember this at all?
No.
This is awesome. You remember this?
I knew it. I wasn't going to remember this.
I knew it. Now I feel like a total ass. Okay, listen. Back in 2001.
Now I remember singing the song.
Okay. I guess Joel,
I do not really remember getting a lyric sheet with beer on it.
Okay. Okay, so here we go.
This is amazing.
Oh, this is so embarrassing. Man. Okay, so I guess Joel, our vocalist, must have contacted you, emailed you, called you or something, and you were like, sure, I'll do it. Just one problem. I don't remember the lyrics. And we were like, oh, no problem. We'll get you the lyrics, right? So you know how it starts, Breathing Murder. On the early church, fueled by zeal, right? So Joel gets, we're in the van on our way to Cornerstone. We have like a 16, 17-hour ride. And he goes, Breathing Murder, upon the early church, fueled by, and he stops, and he goes, Trav, start listing beers. So I was like, okay. And I just started listing beers. And this was like an ongoing thing. Like, for hours, I was just like, Heineken, Dos Equis, and then an hour would go by, and I'd be like, oh, Beck's. Like, I just totally was just like, it was almost like a joke. He wrote them all down. And when we found you at Cornerstone, I feel like such a dipshit telling this story. When we found you at Cornerstone, we handed you the lyric sheet, and we're like, here they are. And we were like laughing, like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to make Bruce laugh, right? And when you were reading it, you took the lyrics and you started reading it, and for some reason you were reading and you were moving your lips and you were going and I could tell by watching your lips that you started getting into beers and your lips stopped moving, and I just saw your eyes scanning across the page and you're going down and down, and we're giggling so hard, we're like, this is gonna be so funny, and you were like, these aren't the lyrics, man. And we were like, oh, okay, sorry. And then we like reached our other pocket and handed you the real lyrics. And we turned around like, oh my God, we just pissed Bruce off. You let him do it now. Anyway. So Breathing Murder.
That's a trip. I don't remember it.
You don't remember any of it? Good. I made the whole thing up.
Not the beer lyric thing. I remember doing the vocals and stuff with you guys. Just, it was on a He's on a generator stage, right?
Yep. One of the
Remember any time like I saw you guys or played with you guys or anything, I was just like, wow, they're so much better than us.
Oh, shut up, please.
Crutch / Alathion was an excellent band. I was fortunate to see them play many, many times. And
I got in Crutch because of Steven.
They were very technically proficient.
Yeah, absolutely. We
tried so hard to get them on Takehold Records at the time, and Chad just wasn't into it. I don't know what his deal was, but it just never worked out.
We didn't look tough or menacing. Yeah. We didn't look good in hoodies. I was wearing like flip-flops and shorts, and I guess they didn't take it seriously or whatever, but it doesn't matter. But anyway, so I'm going to cut that whole part out because I feel like an idiot bringing it up that you don't remember.
No way, man. That's I always hilarious. Wanted to hear Bruce's side to that. And
you know, deep down, I feel like I've been waiting 14 years to ask him about it, and I kind of knew deep down you're going to be like, dude, I don't remember that at all.
I wish I could give you an answer, but I don't. I seriously do not remember.
Awesome. That's
like,
great.
Like, I probably had 1,000 things on my mind, and I was probably like, I don't know, this is funny, but where are the lyrics? Because I really need the lyrics to actually sing the song.
Seriously, I don't know the words.
Ghost, do you want me to sing the song? Because I don't know the lyrics.
Right, okay. And you were reading them. You were reading them while you were screaming, too. That was really funny. You were like,
was I really? That is so lame.
You had the lyrics, like, either on the ground or you had them in your other hand, and you were like, at one point you totally fell off and you were just like, whatever. And you just started screaming and laughing and we were banging into each other. It was a lot of fun. Everybody loved it. It was a good time. We couldn't get you the digital Axl Rose monitor with the digital, you know what I mean? Could have got you one of those with the lyrics on it, but
yeah.
They're hard to find at generator shows.
Yeah, exactly. So I got to jump back. Why did you guys change the name? The podcast.
Oh, back on that. Jesse.
It's been plaguing me.
Okay.
Ever since.
Jesse Jeremiah, the guy who runs Veritas Vinyl, asked me to come on as a guest. His podcast was called Black Vinyl Collective. And he asked me to come on. He was co-hosting with Greg from Crux. And, Greg couldn't make it anymore because of his job. He asked me to come on as like a guest host, and he was like, that was a lot of fun. Do you want to do it all the time? Yeah, sure. So then I came in and we started working on everything. Then Jesse started getting too busy. His job changed. Jesse's like, he manages, like, he lives near a ski town with money. So he works on like multi-million-dollar home full house speaker systems. Like, you know how people can pull out their iPad and control the speakers in the upstairs bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, he wires all that. He's in charge of, like, setting up that crew and everything. His job changed, and he couldn't do the podcast anymore. He asked me to take it over, and I was like, that's cool, but I don't want to take your thing. I'm going to rebrand it and come up with my own
name. That makes sense. Well, I've been doing my homework and kind of just, like, going back and listening to some of them because I'd heard the one with the Black Vinyl Collective with Matt Putman.
Yeah.
Really good. It was awesome. And, and then you guys interview Andrew from Torch.
Yeah.
I've listened to Torch a little bit. I like him or whatever. But because I jumped into the podcast, I realized, oh, this is Andrew from Riddle of Steel.
Yes, it is.
Which I have all three of their records, and I freaking love them. And
wow, that's going back.
I was surprised. And then since then, you guys bring up Jay Robbins like pretty much every podcast, pretty much.
Now you brought him up, so I don't have to this time.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You're a post scene guy from. You're sitting here, listeners. You can't see this. He's sitting here in a quicksand shirt. Who's cool enough to show up in a quicksand shirt?
Hey, Bruce. Quick. Slip or Manic Compression?
Dude, I can't pick. I mean, everybody picks Slip, but man, Manic Compression is so aggressive.
Yeah, they're both excellent for sure.
Yeah,
I'm definitely a Manic. I'm a Manic guy, I think.
I'm a Slipper.
Manic sounds better, and it's more aggressive. I saw them at Riot Fest a couple years ago, and then I saw them at the festival, which was like at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's raining. But then I got tickets to the after the show at the club, which was amazing because it was packed in. And if you go see them now, Well, they haven't been doing many reunions lately, but if you go see him now, Walter just kind of like, he's not really, like, the thing about Quicksand was his delivery, his vocal delivery and his rhythm, sense of rhythm.
Okay.
He doesn't hit it like that anymore. He's not aggressive.
Yeah.
He's a singer now, which is cool, you know, for, Walking Concert and Rival Schools, which they're great too.
I like Rival a lot. I like Rival a lot, yeah.
But when I listen to Quicksand, it's like I want to hear that staccato, that rhythmic, like, vocal pattern or whatever.
Right.
And so he doesn't necessarily do it, and it's kind of a bummer. But at the show, at the club show, and the club show was like at midnight, you know, after Riot Fest and everything like that. So can you just imagine, like, and it's a tiny club. Imagine, like, I don't know, 230-something-year-old dudes screaming the lyrics to him. So, like, he ended up having to sing it right, or he wouldn't sing at all because everybody else was just screaming all the lyrics. It was awesome. It was awesome.
I saw them on the reunion thing a few years ago, and I kind of got that vibe, too. Like, it just didn't feel like I didn't even – the guitars weren't, like loud or anything. It just – the sound kind of sucked, and – it was all
I mean,
it just wasn't you watch the YouTube videos of them, and it's like so different.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing him in that club was fun. It was good because it got loud and rowdy that night just because, I think, really because of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
If the crowd had sucked, the show probably would have sucked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been on the show too with the crowd carries it.
Just a ton of other dudes just yelling the lyrics, and it was great. It was awesome. It's a good time.
We just saw Hum the other night.
Yes.
Remember them?
I did. Yeah, yeah. You saw them?
Yeah, we just saw Hum and Failure played in Philly.
Nice. I saw Hum about 3 weeks ago. The same night as Alice in Chains. Alice in Chains played the Ryman in Nashville, and then the show kind of got out early because they're doing like this like hour and a half long set like with no intro, no encore, but amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And awesome. It got out so early. I knew Hum was playing that night, and my buddy was like, "Hey, they haven't gone on yet, and I can get us in, so let's go." So I went and saw him. Got to see him. Got to see Alice in Chains and Hum the exact same night, and I was just like, "Oh, I was so happy!"
Oh man, that's rad.
That's a lot. That's a lot cool. Of awesome.
That doesn't happen around here.
Hum and Failure are going out for another leg, and Torch actually picked up a part of that. Torch is going to be – imagine that show, Torch, Hum, and Failure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great show.
At the my current job, which is we do merchandising.
Yes.
And design work and stuff like that, mainly designing merchandise and running tours and stuff like that. I got to meet Matt from Hum because he brought his he teaches at Milliken in Illinois.
Okay.
He brought his class down to Nashville to do several kind of like a 2-day trip where, you know, he brings his class down to go see different companies within the music industry and business and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was close with a guy that works in our company and came in, and we got to give a presentation to his class on what we do and all that stuff.
That's cool, man.
That's very cool.
That is rad.
What does he do? Yeah. He teaches what?
He teaches, this particular class had to do with music business.
Okay.
I don't think that's all he teaches. I think he teaches other, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm. Now you were mentioning you mentioned your job. What it's not Zambui anymore.
No, we sold that company about 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. Okay.
Yeah, the company I'm with is called Manhead Merch.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your the 9-to-5 Bruce day. Like what do you do?
I pretty much just like surf the internets.
That's cool. Did they pay you? Did they pay you for that?
No. I just for the What's that?
With an S.
Yeah, yeah, the internet. I head up the e-commerce side of the company, so I deal with a lot of the artists with their online stores, developing product for it, running sales, trying to get their, you know, get more sales for like online and e-commerce stuff.
Very good, very good.
That's rad, man.
But that's just one part of the company. The other parts of the company, and it's a small company. I mean, there's like 10 of us, but you know, we run tours for all these bands.
Okay.
From, you know, the concept to the merchandise line, all the way through to selling and vending at the venues and coordinating the transportation, whether it's like shipping or a semi or whatever.
Right.
So we're just a full service merchandising company.
Merchandising.
I also meant to ask you something else. When you were talking about back in the day with Living Sacrifice, pretty much only touring in the summers because you and DJ were in school the whole time. What did you go to college for?
Well, for the first 2 years, I didn't know what I went to college for.
Right.
Guys, I didn't know what I was gonna major in or anything like that.
Right.
And so I got like a lot of my prerequisites out of the way, and then I had to pick something.
Right.
So the major I picked was like journalism, professional writing. What'd you say?
Pottery. No.
Pottery. Yes.
It's not I was funny. Like, I had to say it 3 times.
Professional technical writing, which is an offshoot of journalism,
right? And,
critical thinking, philosophy type stuff.
Wow.
Because it was like some type of, basically it was a track to go into like law if you wanted to go into law school, which I was kind of like, oh, I might do that someday. I don't know, but no, I never did.
Okay, all right. Just wondering.
But I finished out. You know, I mean, I graduated in '95. You know. Uh-huh. But I never really used it or anything. So, you know, everything was like, you know, I mean, all the business stuff I just learned from touring and being on the road.
Right. Very good. Very cool.
I first saw you guys in 94. I was a fan literally since the first album. I mean, I remember getting that when it first came out. And I was a big fan before the Tooth and Nail switch and all that stuff. And one thing I always wondered as a fan of both sides, and you kind of touched upon it a little bit in the interview with Mark, but like I'm a little confused. What was the cause of that? Is DJ holding it back, or was he like he wasn't able to go full time? Was that the reason why you guys split ways, or
what happened? No, I mean. He I think like I mentioned in that podcast, I mean, he was just doing other things and there were other pressures in his life that really were pulling him away from the band. And I think that he still wanted to be a part of it for sure. Mm-hmm. But he also recognized that he wasn't able to do it, you know, to the level that we wanted to continue on and do it. So yeah, it was, I mean, it was a rough time. I mean, it was rough for him, rough for us. But, you know, I mean, it was just kind of like we felt like it was the right decision and everything. So.
Right. Well, obviously it was mutual because you spoke to him about it. But when you say there were other things in his life, was it like non-musical, normal, pedestrian life, so to speak?
Yeah, you know. You know, just life stuff, you know.
Got it.
Some good, some bad. I can't really speak to it.
Sure. No, that's fine. Yeah, I took myself off the road to come home and be a dad. I remember
yeah, that day. Totally.
Yeah, it was a hard day. I kind of saw it coming and I was kind of hoping that my band would just stay really popular weekend warriors.
Yeah.
But it just I felt like it was galloping and it started to get like they need more than what I can give them and we were at Cornerstone playing the Gathering Ground stage, or whatever that stage was called. And we were Cornerstone in 2002. We played 4 times. Somehow we were all over the place. And
guys were hard workers.
we try to squeeze a lot into a little bit of time because I had to go to work Monday, you know. And I remember we played our 4th show, and we were approached to go to Furnace Fest that year as the first stand-in band. Like, Furnace Fest is booked and you guys aren't playing, but as soon as one band moves, as soon as one van breaks down, as soon as one thing goes wrong, we can get you in. Even if it's 10 o'clock in the morning, who knows?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, Furnace Fest. Oh man, but I gotta go home. My wife is pregnant with twins.
Oh wow.
And I was like, when is it? And I didn't have one of those divine intervention, like, Lord, if you don't want me to do this, give me a sign. I didn't have to ask, because I remember they said the weekend of Furnace Fest was the delivery date. And I was like, okay, I'm out. I quit. I have to go home. And it was one of the hardest decisions of my life.
Was your band bummed? Or did they understand?
Yes to both. Of course they were bummed, because I think it was, you know, we love you, but yeah, beat it. We need to hit the road, you know. So I mean, the time came where it was like, you know, the old man has to go home and have kids. But I think they were mostly bummed, because it was like, how are we going to replace a guy now? Not like I'm irreplaceable. That's not what I mean. But this isn't you're not filling in and playing Weezer covers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you're a beast on the drums. We get it, Travis.
You said it, I didn't. And Steven, I want that isolated as a ringtone for my phone. but it was, where are we going to find somebody? And they did. They found Joe from Blind Influence, who did a fantastic job and improved on stuff that I did. He's a more accurate drummer than I am.
And so, you're very humble.
I'm trying. Now your sense of humor is coming out at a very inconvenient time, wise ass.
It's great.
But I totally remember that it was like, but there has to be a way, right? But I can do both. I'll figure out how to be a dad with twins and work full time and be in a band that almost I can't figure it out. And
yeah, it's tough, man. I mean we don't play very often at all, and I would like to be in a band right now locally, because I live in Nashville and the rest of the guys live in Arkansas.
Right.
Just to jam and just to play, not to tour, not to be anything, but like, I mean, it's so easy to record these days. We could record, we could go play shows if we wanted to and just have fun. That'd right. be cool.
Are you doing anything right now?
Me and the guy are kind of messing around with some music, but you know, it's like, It's just hard to get together.
Right. Yeah.
I will say this. I definitely plan to have something else working, you know.
Right.
I don't know if anybody will ever hear it, but.
Well, I hope so. Start a country band if you're in Nashville.
You're still doing Living Sacrifice, right? I mean, you guys are still.
Yep. Yep. When we can. I mean, it's just everybody's so busy. Right now Lance drives trucks, and he's on a route that's got him like driving back and forth to Atlanta like every day. He's only home on the weekends, and you know, you can imagine, you know, only being home like 2 days a week. Do you really want to like spend 4 or 5 hours rehearsing or jamming with a bunch of you know, dudes?
Yeah,
or do you want to see your family and your kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you guys go through any sort of a crisis? Band crisis with that, like, you know, back in the day when you guys were when Reborn.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, that was the main deal with Jason deciding, you know that he didn't want to tour anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after Reborn had come out. We really felt very strongly about Reborn, and our you know, just our purpose and our point of being. I mean, we were. You know, our plan was to get on the road and try to work it out, make it happen.
Yeah.
And see just see where God took it, you know.
Right.
And we were very, very passionate about the songs. It was super different, but at the time, you know, we were like, you know, we wanted to put out something that reflected us.
Right.
Instead of, you know, what was the most brutal or popular in, you know, the underground metal world.
Right.
And, it was definitely, obviously, a huge, huge, departure, you know, from the stuff with, DJ, but, I didn't sing death metal, and I knew that my voice probably wouldn't work, very well for that stuff. So we kind of pulled back on everything. We were just like, well, you know, what did we grow up on, you know? And it was all very much thrash-oriented, you know? I mean, the first album is thrash, you know? And, I mean, Reborn has a lot of aspects of thrash to it, you know, with blending hardcore influence as well, you know? You guys will love this, but a lot of the dissonance that you hear on Reborn, that's directly influenced from bands like Jawbox and Quicksand.
Yes, that's rad.
I did love hearing that.
I mean,
that is cool.
I mean, just like the leads and the stuff like that. Like, I'm not a Tweedly lead player. I don't do arpeggios or anything like that. But
right.
even the dissonant lead part in the song Reject. I mean,
Reject. I
it's just
glad you said that.
I mean, I pulled that directly out of Jay Robbins' book.
That's right. Take hold, it's a black spirit of God. Rebuke, take hold, the authority of God.
Noisy and jangly and yeah. I hear that. I hear that now.
It's interesting because, you know, Inhabit was just musically was just insane. It's still one of my favorite metal albums. But
dude, don't you think parts of it are pretty boring though?
Not at all.
That's
good.
That's awesome. Because sometimes I'll listen to it and I'll just be like, man, we really, really drug that part out, didn't we?
What part in particular?
I don't know. I can't remember like right now, but like, you know.
Oh, no way.
You know, anyways, yeah. You know, there's stuff, all always stuff you go back and look at and it's like, oh, you know, that's got great parts to it. Why do we play this so long, or why do we just drag it out? But yeah.
All right, let's play this game real quick. I have to do this. What would you change if you could on those first three records? I'm just curious because it's such a split sound now, you know, and the fans are so split sometimes on these things. I'm just curious. I always took it as like Inhabit like has an interesting production sound. Actually, I would say Non-Existent and Inhabit had a very interesting production sound, but Reborn clearly was just so much bigger sounding, you know. The production was like your first super huge sounding, in my opinion, record. And I always was wondering what it would be like to hear those other albums recorded like that. But what would you change if you had a
man? You know, I mean, my least favorite. No, I wouldn't change heart much at all about the first album, except for the guitar tones. I think are real. Are kind of high indie, and I remember we were just searching for some guitars, and we had a blend of a Marshall, and then Jason's Mesa Boogie, and for whatever reason Kurt really liked this Marshall. I mean, we were super young. I think I was still 18 at the time. I might have been 19, but
Kurt Bachman of Believer recorded the album.
Yeah, Kurt. Yeah, and Doug Mann from REX.
Yep.
And I remember thinking as we were tracking, I was like, "Oh, this is just like raw tracks. You know, they're gonna EQ it. It's gonna get better."
Whoops.
But it didn't. It kind of stayed the same. And I remember A being the Mesa with the Marshall, and thinking, "Man, that Mesa sounds awesome. This Marshall not so great. It's not so good." And I don't know if I even said anything or not, or whoever said anything, but Kurt was like, "Oh no, this is great. This is awesome." And then I was just like, "Well, Kurt Bachman thinks it's awesome." And sweet.
I was gonna say, it's like, how do you argue with Kurt, right?
No doubt.
He must think it's right. So,
dude, we were actually huge fans of their guitar tones.
Oh yeah.
On on Extraction and Sanity. I mean, we felt like, you know, those dudes, they were able to dial it in for sure. That's really probably the only thing I've changed, you know, on that. I think the drums sound amazing.
Yes.
On that record.
Agreed.
Those guys, it was recorded in Cedar Falls, Iowa at, randomly out of all places. It's just someplace that Doug Mann had found. And it was just like, it was a great studio in the middle of nowhere in a college town. So, you know, not many people went there, so I'm sure they got a great deal on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the two engineers that ran it, man, they were just killer. Killer dudes. They knew what they were doing. I couldn't name you one other record that came out of that studio. Hmm. I'm sure there were. There probably were some. Non-existence, you know, I've made no bones about it. You know, that was just a bad experience for us all the way around.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you maybe you haven't elaborated on that, but Doug had booked us in a studio here in Nashville, literally like five blocks from where my office is now,
mm-hmm.
at the studio on Music Row, and we got in there. It was kind of like a small basement studio. It wasn't that big of a deal. It didn't really have to do with the studio. It had to do with the talent behind it, and you know who you're working with, and what they could do with it. You know, obviously, yeah. And those were the first album and Non-Existent were both recorded to 2-inch tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's awesome.
So you know, that's what we were working with. So we had Doug had hired this engineer, and if Doug, if you're listening, we've already. You know, we've already come to peace with the fact that album didn't go so well or whatever.
Sure.
But,
and Doug, if you're listening, you're invited to come on the show.
Oh, you should totally have Doug Mann on here.
And tell your story about the Non-Existent experience.
Yeah, 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 yeah. What he'll tell you is that we were pissy little children, probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he ended up quit. He ended up just not coming to the studio anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, man.
He just quit coming because we just had so many problems, and our problems were with the engineer that did not know metal.
Hmm.
He didn't know anything about metal, and we were trying to explain to him, and we were playing him records. This is what this is what we want it to sound like, and he had no frame of reference, none. Whatsoever, and Doug will admit that.
Right.
And so we challenged this guy. We said, okay, to get this kick drum sound, you are going to have to replace it, or to trigger it onto tape. Right. That's how you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he never heard of that. He's like, no, we don't need to do that. No, man, I'm just gonna EQ it. You'll see, it's gonna be awesome. So I guess as bad as it sounds, oh man, it could have been way worse. But yeah, the guitar tones. I mean, basically, at one point, we just told him to step aside, and then we just started moving the knobs, and we had no clue what we were doing, trying to EQ that record.
Yikes.
I never thought it sounded bad.
I didn't either, especially the drums.
I just think Reborn was muddy. Just such a huge step.
Yeah, it sounds muddy. I mean, obviously, it sounds way different than the first record, right?
Sure. I think all three of them sound...
Yeah. Yeah, and that was just basically us trying to figure it out because the guy, the engineer that we had, just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then And then we recorded it really, really fast. Like, I think the drums were done in 2 days, and then everything else was done in 4 days. And wow. Then we got the rough tracks before we left, and then we had to come back up to mix it on a different time period. And yeah, we were just not happy with the performance or the atmosphere.
Wow, I'm amazed to hear you say this.
It was rough. And then with the vocals, we had written all that stuff fairly fast, because I mean, the time period between the first album and Non-Existent was like a year, and so
yeah,
it was pretty quick. You know, I mean, we'd done a tour and everything, but we were also in school. And then it was like, oh, hey, it's time to record a new record. And so none of the vocals, like, we didn't hear any of the vocals until we got into the studio. And then DJ wanted to try out what he did, you know, essentially, which is very, you know, just very death metal influence, indecipherable, you know, with his delivery,
right,
things like that. And I wasn't into it, and I told him at the time, and we got into a big fight.
So you weren't really a fan of the death metal vocals?
Well,
or just the way he did it?
I mean, I like certain death metal vocalists. You know, I mean, sure. I think what he was going for was, you know, a little too long lines of like Obituary, and
right.
Although not at all. I mean, it was like his version. I mean, it was him. You know, kind of. What he felt like he wanted to do, and you know what it came down to was like, hey man, this is my thing, you know, I'm the vocalist, I'm gonna do this. I was like, okay, yeah, cool. And you know, I mean, he had a real strong idea about what he wanted it to sound like, and mm-hmm. and there's actually some songs on it where I think his vocal delivery is pretty cool. Distorted, I think, is pretty cool. There's one other where just his enunciation is a lot better.
Right. So.
Records, and
that's great, man. I mean, I think the
amazed.
Way honestly, I think the way music hits you at the age that you hear it,
mm-hmm.
At the time that you hear it, you know, that's how it speaks to you. I mean, I know stuff that I'm into that I go back and listen to. I mean, it sounds horrible. It is just terrible, what it sounds like. But I don't care, because you know, right, that song made me stoked when I was 16 and I was driving my truck, and
right,
I was with some buddies or whatever, you know, like, you know, the band Dag Nasty comes to mind.
There you go.
Some of their records sound terrible, but I love them. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And speaking of DJ, I noticed he's been doing some stuff with you guys again. Is he's hanging out, and why not do some vocals, or is there something a little more going on with that?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. And it's actually been about a year or so since we did all that stuff. But yeah. It was kind of like, man, it'd be cool. I started out with a show in Little Rock. We're like, hey, man, let's get DJ to sing a couple songs. And he was down and everything, and it's great. I love it, man. It's just so fun. I mean, we still hang out and, you know, see each other when I'm in town and stuff like that. He's still one of my best friends. And I mean, I've known the guy since seventh grade, and he's just like,
cool.
You know, I mean, he started this thing. I mean, you know, there's... You know, I mean, he convinced Lance to do it. He convinced me to do it. You know, I mean, this is his baby. You know, in the beginning.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed about DJ was I didn't fall into any live Living Sacrifice footage from back then until much later. But I remember hearing live Living Sacrifice with DJ and saying, that's DJ? Like, I just felt like all the live footage I ever heard from you guys, which wasn't much, and none of it was recorded well because it was, you know, name the year, early 90s or something, I couldn't believe it was the same dude on the album. I just felt like...
Yeah.
I felt like the first album, second album, Inhabit, the third album, and all the live stuff is four different guys. I just felt like...
Yeah.
Wow, he's just... He can do anything with his voice. He's like all over the place. Not in a bad way, but I just felt like obviously non-existent to Inhabit was a totally, 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 totally different vocal style. And I liked Inhabit more, personally. But then I saw live footage of you guys doing Breathing Murder, which is what inspired us to cover it. And I remember going, oh my God, that's DJ? Like, it just sounded like so much more brutal and gurgly, throaty. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, he seemed to have more like a hardcore vibe in concert. The other stuff is more production-y.
Am I totally crazy? You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No, totally. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Have you guys seen the stuff he did with us last year, the live stuff in Dallas?
I haven't.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I hear DJ's voice, I think of the first album.
Hmm, okay.
I
haven't seen it, but Steven said he sounds better now than he ever remembers him sounding.
Yeah, I thought that footage, he sounded amazing.
He did. He sounds great, for sure.
Well, so what made you want to be the lead singer then?
I didn't want to be. I didn't necessarily want to be the lead singer.
I remember the answer to this one. I think you and Jason were both trying it, and Jason kept losing his voice, and you didn't. So they were like, you're the singer.
Well, what we felt like was we didn't want to bring in a new front man. Somebody to sing for the band, like that hadn't been in the band, you know. We felt like that would be weird, and we thought it would be a lot better for one of us to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Jason would sing some stuff, and I would sing stuff, but Jason would lose his voice just after one song, and I guess had found a way to kind of to not do that. Mm-hmm. And I think early on, obviously before the Reborn stuff, like we were touring and playing shows, and we were playing a lot of, playing some new stuff, but we were playing a lot of the old stuff because that's the material that we had. Sure. I don't think there's much footage of that. There might be somewhere, but you know, there's footage of me like, you know, doing the old stuff and definitely more of a, I would say probably more along the lines of a Max Cavalera type way.
Yep.
Right on.
I remember you mentioning that, which I like because some of my favorite, favorite vocal styles is Max, Jason Wisdom from Becoming the Archetype.
Jason is awesome. He is so good.
He's got a heck of a voice too. Yeah.
What you were doing with Reborn, what Chris McCadden was doing with Embodiment was this brutal, nasty. But I can still understand them. I have such a hard time understanding vocalists sometimes that there was something about it. Like, it's brutal, and I don't have to read along to the lyrics because I can actually understand what the dude's saying, you know? I like that style a lot.
I'm a lot lower now than Reborn, though. Like, I don't sing in that higher, yelly type range anymore.
Yeah.
Blowing your voice out.
You know,
I feel a lot more comfortable just lower, you know.
Settled into it, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I dig that, though. I got that cassette tape, Cornerstone 96.
Oh.
I remember, I thought you guys broke up, because back then it was like every year was a new album, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, there was a gap, right?
There was a gap, yeah. I remember buying that cassette tape and hearing it and just thinking, holy crap, like, this is going to be huge. Like,
he came home from Cornerstone. He's my cousin, so we always hooked up for, like, Christmas or Thanksgiving or something.
Oh, nice. I didn't know you guys were related. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. And he came home from Cornerstone, and it was like our routine was like, hi, family, hi, aunt this, hi, uncle that. and then we would eat, and then we'd go hide in his room or up in my – his room was in the basement. Mine was on the third floor of my house. We'd go like, okay, so what do you have? We'd start exchanging music and copying cassettes and stuff.
Yep, that was the thing.
I remember the first time I saw him after Cornerstone in 96, he's like – he shut the door, and he was like, dude, you have to hear Living Sacrifice's new demo. I was like, okay. And it was when Sellout kicks in with the and the kick drum is locked down on the rhythm, and I was like, okay, all right, thank God they're still together. This is happening. So,
yeah. Well, so I mean, that was pretty different. Obviously, even the demo version though, where you just like, you still liked it, but it was like, you weren't like.
The demo. I remember feeling like it was like literally what it was like the in between coming out of it. For me, anyway, it sounded like,
yeah,
you know, the same band but just you singing. And because there's some stuff on Inhabit that have like those breakdowns and the slower parts, so I kind of saw it coming slowly, you know, and then it was, you know, so much more of that. But at the time, you know, I was there from the beginning with the Tooth and Nail stuff and all that all that stuff happening, and I just remember it seemed like it made sense. It was almost like, you know, you're hearing. It's like whatever became before Tooth and Nail Records, it's almost like that's considered like the old stuff. Not just everybody. And it's like whatever was coming out at that time in Tooth and Nail was like, you know, any of the bands that crossed into this are going to go this way now. Like they're going to take it this direction. And remember, so hearing you guys, I just remember going to shows in Philadelphia and the Tooth and Nail people would be there. And it'd be setting up tables, like the Danielson shows and stuff I'd go to, all these weird shows in the Philly area. And you'd see the staff from Tooth & Nail on tour with various bands from that label. And so it was like the thing to go up to them and go, okay, I heard that so-and-so is signed to the label now. Or I heard that,
awesome.
You know, it was like that whole spirit. I mean, of course, you know what I'm talking about. You were part of all that. Just the excitement of like this, all that music that was coming out, you know.
Well, yeah, but do you understand my perspective was I was coming out of a weird label situation where.
Oh, I want to talk to you about that. What a great segue.
We were owed money. The guy that started the label had already left. Doug, our friend, Doug Mann, had left the label, and we just kind of felt like. These guys really don't care about us, and they were venturing out and signing all this pop stuff. I mean, towards the end of REX, man, it was not metal anymore. I mean, when we signed on, all happened within a matter of, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. It just, like, completely changed. And so, I mean, what it came down to was, like, they said, hey, we want you to go and record your fourth record, which we owed them. And we said, okay, we would like to see some statements or royalties from the last three, though. Please.
Please.
Please. We're only 19. Please.
They couldn't really provide it. And when they finally did provide it, they're like, okay, we owe you about, I don't know, $8,000, $10,000. But we can't pay you.
Of course.
But we can give you an advance for your next record. And we were like, nah, why don't we do this? Give us all of our masters from the last three albums, and you don't owe us anything. That's what we did.
So you did get them then?
Yeah, that's how we were able to license them to Tooth and Nail. We own the masters for the first three albums. We licensed them in 99 to Tooth and Nail, and that's how they were able to be reissued.
Gotcha.
That's awesome. I don't know. It was hard. It's hard to talk about. You know, that it wasn't a whole lot of that stuff coming out in Christian music at the time. You guys were such a huge jump in quality from so many of those bands, even on the same label. You know, and it was just a. It just set, the only time I would say it was with you guys, and when I first saw Zayo do the Blood and Fire lineup, where I remember thinking like, this is gonna be the stuff people are gonna want to list. Like, you get that feeling, you know. It was those two records, I think, that really opened it up for me. I thought were
oh, wow, that's cool. That's big. Awesome. Mine and they were both done in Little Rock with Barry Pointer.
Barry, yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah.
Mine was.
And I worked on Blood and Fire actually.
Yeah, I remember them. Oh, saying, did you? That's really cool.
Yeah, it's one of my few production credits.
Mine was my albums were Reborn and Advent of a Miracle from Strong Arm.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Those two albums recalibrated my walk with God, to be honest with you. I told Steve that the drummer when I had him on. Those were
that's amazing.
Those were two like grew up, took it for granted. Like I remember your testimony with the whole like I didn't have it in my life at all, and then I came into it thing. I was in it from the beginning and took it for granted and didn't grow up till my mid-20s. You know what I mean? And just totally to the point where you wouldn't even understand what I was or who I was about. And then I had like a dead reckoning, kind of a okay, it's time to grow up moment. And Reborn and Advent were right there, and it was and those lyrics were. I mean, I know Reject was like your hit, the big popular car commercial, but those lyrics were like in the mouth. It was just like no one to blame but me, and it hit the right chord at the right time. That album was really big for me. Still is.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. Advent of the Miracle is a great company to be in. So.
Yeah. Wow. That album still gives me the chills when I hear it. Let's get back.
I remember seeing Strong Arm at Cornerstone, because I'll be honest, I was kind of in going back to what Steve was talking about. We held off from signing to Tooth and Nail for over a year because we were like, well, we're a metal band. We don't really know how we're going to fit on this label. And then some of the early hardcore records that were coming out. I remember seeing some of those bands even as well, and there was definitely an energy to what they did.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we were metal dudes, and right. So
yeah.
The performances weren't really there for us.
Right.
For some of those bands. I mean, we held things up to like you know. Old Metallica, Carcass, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And so some of that stuff was tough, and Brandon, there was a point in time where he would call me, like every week, he would just find me and call me. He called me. I remember distinctly having conversations at my jobs, where he'd. Found out where I worked or gotten my number from my mom. It's like, hey,
stalking
man.
You.
Hey, man, you know, what do you think? And to be fair, Brandon is a legitimate fan. One of his favorite albums is Non-Existent.
That's great. No, that's like, really cool.
And I've later heard a story Bill told me, because if you knew the folks that worked at the label, you know, they were all super, you know, they were pretty, you know, independent, indie, you know, rock, and they came from more of a punk scene. And we were just literally, we were like, you know, a metal band from the South.
Right.
You know, so far opposite from Seattle. And, I mean, basically my thoughts on Tooth and Nail after meeting them, you know, Brandon was like, you know, the consummate, like, say almost sales guy, CEO type thing. But then everybody else that worked for him, like, were like, they look like they just walked out of art school or drama club or whatever. I mean, they were very, you know, drama very club. Arty.
Drama club. That made me
But Bill told, They're all super cool, super nice people, but, you know, I mean, we were literally hicks from the South.
Yeah, yeah.
What did we know, you know? And so,
you can go to school for art.
That's great. So
one day Bill's like, Bill says, he's like, yeah, one day Brandon just basically said, I'm signing Living Sacrifice. I don't care what any of you think.
Sounds like him the way you're talking.
Because I guess how they would, you know, sign bands is like, you know, the label had to kind of like all be on board, kind of be into it. But, you know, he's putting out, you know, laying down Living Sacrifice, you know, in front of all the staffers. And they're just kind of like, hey, yeah, you know. I mean, they just weren't into it, which is fine. You know, it's not a big deal. But Brandon was the one that wanted it, you know. And so we worked with him just out of his sheer persistence, for sure. And, I mean, credit to him, for sure. I mean, I've told him
That's cool.
But, like, we were definitely apprehensive just because of REX and all that whole thing.
That's interesting because you'd think, oh man, Tooth and Nail, Solid State's knocking down your door.
It was super early though. I mean, you're talking like 95. I mean, the label had only been around since 93.
Okay, that's fair. Fair enough. I didn't think of it that way.
And the only thing we knew were like some of the punkish stuff, and then like I think they had put out Focused and maybe Unashamed. And then we were one of the first bands to come out on the Solid State imprint.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we were Reborn was like was either the second or the third one.
I was gonna say first was Advent.
Was it? I thought it was that first Zayo record.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna say that Advent was first. I'm gonna say you were second or third, and I think Blood and Fire was fourth.
No, it was not Blood and Fire, it was the one with Sean Jonas.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Splinter Shards.
Split, yeah.
Recorded in the same studio as the fourth Jawbox. Not to bring that back, but anyway.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because when I was in a different band at the time, we opened for them in 97. They had just recorded that album and it hadn't come out yet, and they were handing us a bunch of Jawbox stickers because they had said they recorded in the same place. I don't know the name of the studio. I want to say it's Oz Studios, but I might be wrong about that. It could be a different thing. But anyway,
I always associate Jawbox with Inner Ear.
Yeah, I think the fourth one, the late major label one.
Oh, gotcha. The self-titled one?
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, you know.
Speaking of, that's getting re-released this month.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
The self-titled Jawbox album. It's Discord and DeSoto are re-releasing it on CD and vinyl.
Nice.
Yeah, Run and
that's a great one too.
Run and get your copy. Yeah, I love that one.
The first time I heard Jawbox was off of a Maximum Rock and Roll compilation. That my buddy had given me.
Nice.
And literally every band on that compilation just sucked balls. Except Jawbox.
I remember mine was a Spew sampler, a Spew cassette 4, I think, and I got it at a record store from here. It was a record CDs, cassettes, and it was like $1. And I remember it was like, dude, it was the wildest compilation. It had like Tears of the Dragon from Bruce Dickinson when he left Iron Maiden for a while. And it had a King's X Dogman was on there. And Machines of Loving Grace, I think, was on there.
Crazy.
And Savory. And Jawbox was in there, and I heard Savory for the first time.
Yeah, it's an Atlanta Records comp. That's why, because they were on Atlantic Records.
Okay.
Yep.
So maybe I got a couple of those other bands wrong, but I remember just that made sense. That makes sense as to why it was such a wide spectrum. But I remember hearing like Tears of the Dragon with Bruce Dickinson, and I was like, okay, all right, whatever. And when I flipped it over, I heard Savory with those jangly chords just the way it starts. I was like, ooh, what is that? And it took me to I discovered Sunday Day Real Estate when everybody else did, when Seven was on 120 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, they aired it like four times, you know. And It just totally took me to that side of things where I was like, yeah, I listen to Pantera all the time, and I listen to Sepultura and all that and everything, but I have this indie side of me too. What is Jawbox? What is that, dude? It's been a
but rabbit, there's
been a rabbit hole.
Know, it makes sense though, because if you think about it, there's a certain musicianship with a lot of those bands. I don't know what you call them, post punk, math rock, or whatever, but yeah, where the drummer is playing odd time beats.
Yep.
Always, there's just, you know, very rarely, you know, like a 4/4 type thing.
Yep.
You know, or they're just, you know, like doing different patterns on their toms, or just different patterns, period, that are not like hi-hat, kick, snare.
I did not waste my time with boring drummers, ever.
You know, and so, like, yeah, I love that stuff, you know. Did you guys ever get into to Shiner?
I liked what I heard from them, but I never, they weren't like one of my main guys. My, I was obsessed with Shudder to Think. They were like my favorite.
Oh, then, sweet. I saw them in Little Rock once at Beano's.
Like during their era, the era?
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Shiner's drummer is the one that just played with Hum.
Yeah.
That's what I was just
Jason,
thinking. Yeah.
Jason Gherkin.
Is that his name? I don't even know his name. But
yeah. Oh, I got a great one for you. Jason Gherkin also plays on one or two Project 86 records.
Really?
Yes.
The dude that we just saw play with Hum played on... Yes. No kidding.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's
small world, man.
It's crazy. I can't think of the names of it, but those guys connected to each other. We were all on tour. It was Living Sacrifice, Staves Acre, and Project 86 on tour in 2000. And in Columbus, Ohio, I saw a flyer that said Shiner. I was like, and it was such a janky ghetto flyer. I was like, can this be the same Shiner? Because it was just dumb looking. It was like, or is this like a local band that just like wrote their name in a Sharpie?
Right.
And so we didn't know, and then the band like loads in, and I was actually with my buddy Mike from Polar, because he was filling in on bass with Staves Acre, so he was on that tour.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big Shiner fan.
That's funny.
And me and Mike were at this record store. I was like, dude, that can that be? You think this is the actual Shiner? Because I knew who they were and listened to them, and that's kind of how me and Mike had initially connected, was just musically on that stuff. But anyways, so we played our show with Project 86, and then their show was so late that we finished our show, and the entire tour went down to watch the Shiner show, and in this small club,
right?
And they just killed it. God, they killed it. And they had this band opening for, so that's literally how the Project 86 guys met those guys, and then later on, they asked Gherkin to play on their record because Alex had left the band.
That's cool.
And everything. But there was also a band there at that show called Houston.
Okay.
If you've never listened to Houston or never heard them, and you can just find them on YouTube, they're really hard to Google, because when you Google Houston band, a lot of stuff comes up, like a rapper and then Whitney Houston and whatever. But sure, this is a band that put out either one or two records. The record's called Bottom of the Curve.
Okay.
Check that out.
Will do.
Play some of that on the podcast.
Never even heard of it.
Well, I'll try to get it on this episode if I can find it.
Here, let's try it.
It's called, you just Google Houston, Bottom of the Curve. That record is so awesome.
We'll try a drop right now. Steven, why don't you play us a little bit of Houston?
There's another new record I've been into like this last year was Alan, the singer for Shiner, has a new band called Life and Times.
Oh my God, yeah.
Phenomenal.
The Life and Times. My buddy Brian introduced me to them the exact same day he introduced me to Rival Schools. That was a big day.
Yep. Well, their last album, Lost Bees, incredible.
I don't remember the name of the album. I'm so bad.
Well, the new one, the last one came out like last year sometime, like early, either 2013 or 2014. Okay. So it's pretty recent. And the thing about those guys, they're all probably tracking in like really lo-fi studios or whatever, but they sound massive. The drums are always huge.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, that's...
Let me ask you this question now that we're on this subject. Are you, what do you, I don't, you might be already answering this question with these bands, but what are like some of your, like, of the bands that are really exciting you right now? Like, what are you listening to these days?
Oh man, I knew you'd ask that. man, I don't know. I
you knew we were gonna ask, and you're still not prepared.
And come I'm on. Not prepared. No.
Come on, dude.
Totally not. Well, and I listen to a lot of old stuff, but yeah. But Spotify's been cool in that, like, you know, it's just so easy to access stuff and to like type in an artist and then have the radio kind of like.
Carry
whatever. I used to do that with Pandora, but I never really liked the results all that much.
Right.
And then I tried to put Pandora on my phone and everything and then plug it into my car, but it was the worst quality that I'd ever heard. I literally couldn't listen to it. Maybe they've upgraded since then. This was a few years ago. But anyway, so with Spotify, you know, I mean, I'll find stuff here and there, you know, I don't know, some of the weirder stuff that I really like, that's Florence and the Machine.
Heard of it.
It's pretty pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Some of her stuff, it's kind of different, but it's just very vocal driven. It's not rock. I mean it's kind of rock, but it's whatever. I actually saw her them open for U2. Several years ago, and I didn't know anything about them. I'd never watched them, and I was like, or never heard them. And I thought it was interesting, but I didn't go out and seek it out. I didn't go like, oh, I've got to go find that record or whatever. But right. Then when I started listening to Spotify, it would kind of pop up here and there. But I don't know, like that stuff. But Life and Times, Office of Future Plans.
Oh, finally somebody said it. I love that band.
Yeah, that new record is so good.
New record or the only full length they have?
Stuff like that, but then otherwise, you know, like old stuff that I've been listening to for years or whatever. Like
You say new record from Office of Future Plans. You talk about their only full length, or is there?
Yeah, yeah, the only one that came out.
Okay, all right.
I mean, that's fairly recent, the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, dude, if a record's been out less than 2 years, that's pretty new to me.
Yeah, no, I got you. I'm just making sure I'm not behind, and they just came out with something and I missed.
No, totally, yeah.
Got it.
I really like the newer Metallica, you know, like the Black Album.
Yes.
Yeah, they just came out with that black one.
I saw Woven Hand the other night in concert, and that was pretty intense. I really enjoyed that.
He was here last night, and I missed it.
Oh, really?
Has been talking about them, and I mean, I don't know how much I've heard. I mean, I literally kept hearing them. I think Mark Solomon was the first I kept hearing from him. I keep hearing the name, and I've listened to a couple songs, but I haven't really delved in enough to be like, oh yeah, I get it. So
I've never listened to him until now, and I heard the newest album, Refractory, is so good. Then I went and dug through Steven's collection, because he has everything, because he's been listening to Woven Hand since 16 Horsepower, and everything that I'm listening to doesn't hold a candle to the newest one. So now I'm bummed out, because I could have progressed and now arrived at his best work. Now instead I'm going backwards and I'm like, I still like the new one.
Well, you need
better.
To listen to it again, because it's all really good.
Yeah, because I got time. I'm just going to knock off work tomorrow and listen to Woven Hand for 8 hours.
A lot, of what I've been doing, it's funny. So like the office I work in, I work with like this guy's in his like mid-30s. You know, so he's about 8 years younger than me, you know.
Okay.
He comes from more of a punk rock, pop punk, you know, era. Sure. And so we just keep playing this game where I'm like, have you heard this band? You know, it'll be like something obscure that that I really got, you know, might have gotten into, but then, you know, maybe never got popular or something like that. And so I'll play it for him, and he's like either into it or not, and he does the same with me or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever listen to that band Open Hand?
Open Hand?
That sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
I feel like somebody told me about them recently. It might have been Tim from Warlord, because he's always dropping names, but I don't know. Probably
not. Open Hand, pretty awesome.
Never heard of it.
Check him out.
Yeah. Heard of Woven Hand?
Woven Hand and Open Hand. We got it. Yeah, we got a lot of.
And Open Hand and Open Hand, and
Strong Arm.
Woven War. Yeah, it's all intertwined together.
Yeah.
What part of Pennsylvania are you guys from?
I live in Lancaster area, Lancaster Amish country.
I live about an hour north of Philly. I live in the Lehigh Valley.
We're about an hour and a half from each other.
Yeah,
because you know we did the Inhabit record in Colebrook.
Yep.
Yes.
And Joey's mom's house.
That's closer to Stephen. It's still not near Stephen, but it's way closer to Stephen than it is me.
It's probably an hour around, something like that. But yeah,
we did it in the winter.
I wish I'd known that.
We did it in the winter, and there was snow everywhere.
Wasn't it like Christmas or something? I feel like
We left Christmas Day.
You left Christmas Day. Yeah.
Drive.
It's hilarious, man.
To start driving, and
you guys were committed
all the way straight through. And it took us, you know, I don't know, however many hours, 16 hours.
Oh man, I wish I knew you guys were here recording. I was too young to know all that stuff, but I think I was. What year is that? 94. I was 16 at the time, so I didn't. I would have totally stalked that studio if I knew you guys were over there.
It was funny. I was asking the August Burns Red guys if they knew the Believer, had heard of Believer, because they're from the same area. Years ago. And they hadn't.
Oh, see, these young guys, man.
Dude, they were my jam. Believer was my...
Oh, man, I will never forget the first time I heard Extraction from Metallica. I mean, this is like 90... one-ish maybe, probably around the time Sandy Obscure was coming out, but I heard them on Christian radio, believe it or not, played that, and that first song, Unite, with the keyboards and all that, and the organs, and that just scared the crap out of me. It was just so creepy, but that and Beheaded from Vengeance Rising just scared
yes.
I never forget when I first heard that record, too, and it just being like, oh, my gosh, this is the scariest thing ever. But, yeah, man, Believer, huge fan of Believer, and we're trying so hard to get Kurt on this show, and they're so hard to get a hold of.
I'm working on it.
Joey's easy to talk to, but Kurt is
Joey's not that easy to talk to, because sometimes his flip phone from 1998 doesn't get the text all the time.
maybe they'll come on now that Bruce was on. They'll be like, oh, okay, maybe it is a cool podcast. Bruce was on.
I don't know. I'm working on it. Definitely in conversation with it. But
Were you guys around at when we came through? Is it Bethlehem where the Crock Rock is? In 2008.
That's Travis's town right there.
That's my town, and no, I missed it. Crock Rock is in Allentown. It's right. It's 10 minutes from me.
That's right, Allentown.
Yeah, and I live in Bethlehem, the next town over. And no, I.
What year was it?
It was like 2008. That was like our. That was like the tour where we, just came back out. It was like after our 5-year breakup.
Oh, okay.
I remember in 2008, I went to see. Becoming the Archetype there in the same place. And
it was a great show, but Kurt and Joey came out to that show.
I distinctly remember
and we got to hang out with them.
I couldn't get there that night for some reason.
Yeah, there's a great picture of me and Kurt and Ryan from Demon Hunter somewhere on my Facebook. But
That's great.
I'm really glad I missed that show. Could have hung out with Kurt and Joey and Ryan from Demon Hunter and watched Living Sacrifice, but I was probably 2008. Who knows what?
We did get to see Believer in 2008 or 9.
Yeah, Believer, like they showed up at the Sterling Hotel,
It's a little dive bar.
The way we do metal shows around here is it's like an all-day freaking festival. It's at a bar, and there's 11 bands. It's so terrible. Everybody's just, it's so terrible. And Believer headlined, and it was to support Gabriel.
Wow.
Yeah. And
I didn't know they did any shows.
Check this out.
Yeah,
dude.
Check
this out. We got there, the bar in Allentown, which is literally 5 blocks from Croc Rock, the same place you're talking about. We get the Sterling Believers there. I'm like, oh my God, that's Kurt, you know? And yeah. I think it was 06, I think. And they get on stage, and Kurt's like, so this is the first time we've played in 17 years. And Steven and I looked at each other like, what? Like, oh my God, that was the first show they ever played. They did like, I guess they're really good buddies with CKY and the Westchester Bam Margera crowd. They're in with all those folks.
Oh, and,
They were thumping around Westchester. Kurt lives in Westchester, and they were just pegging off a couple shows here and there, but the Allentown was the first one.
They played Allentown. They played the entire Gabriel record, and they ended with Sanity Obscure.
Yeah, they played basically all new, and then they knew if they didn't do one old song, we'd probably lynch them.
Yeah, we would all, exactly.
And it was like, man, it was heaven.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And they were great. They were excellent. And
wow, that's awesome. Yeah, while we were touring throughout the early 2000s, when we'd come through there, we stayed with Joey a couple times at his house.
Nice.
He was always a great host, him and his wife.
Yeah.
I remember he was really into biking, mountain biking.
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
At the time. And, you know, he was just Joey. He's same old Joey. Just hadn't changed at all.
No,
and
he hasn't.
But I just haven't kept up with him, you know, even since then, you know.
Believer put out an update video at the beginning of this year letting him know that we're trying to work on new stuff. It was Kurt, like, bitching. Like, we're trying to work on new stuff, and here's the reason that we can't. And he whipped out this piece of paper, and he's like, Joey Daub, and he started listing all this, like, almost like professional level of BMX bike racing stuff. And apparently, Joey was ranked, like, I guess in the age bracket of 40 to 45 or 41 to 46 or something like that, Joey is ranked, like, second in the state or something.
Yeah, he's for real.
He's an animal. Stuff. He's a piece of machinery, dude. He's just
like, great because he's a drummer. So it's good that he's in shape because we know he can still play drums.
He's been working at the same place since he was a kid.
Yeah.
He's got a job where he does some sort of machining coil.
Oh yeah, I know what he does. Yeah.
Okay, all right. And I guess he just goes to work, comes home, does normal stuff, does dad stuff, husband stuff, hops on a bike and leaves. Bicycles around and he races on the weekend and competes.
And then Kurt has Kurt's a doctor of chemistry.
I definitely can't wait to talk to Kurt. I want to know where Kurt went in 1993. That's one of my greatest mysteries.
He got his doctorate.
I know he did, but wow.
So,
yeah, I got a lot of questions about that Dimensions record. A lot of questions.
Wow.
But so well, Living Sacrifice is working on music, sort of.
Oh, well, yeah, sort of, trying to. I'm sure that we'll do something and put out a new record at some point. It's just not, at the front of
It's not like it was.
Right
it's
now.
Not a, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you happy with that?
Arthur just had his fourth kid.
Oh, wow.
And they're working, but really Lance is schedule-wise, it's just really tough. So, and the Rockies got like... Okay. Multiple projects going on and bands and stuff like that.
That's cool. So, are you happy with and content with where you're at with art and music and all that stuff? With Living Sacrifice.
Well, definitely with Living Sacrifice. I'm proud of this the material we put out since we got back together, starting with Death Machine stuff and Infinite Order. And definitely Ghost Thief, we put a lot of time and effort into all that stuff. That's why it's hard to really just kind of do it part time or kind of here and there. Because I mean we'll write separately, but we actually get into a room, jam out the songs, make changes, things like that. You know, we like to feel how they feel, you know, when we, yeah, when we play them. I mean, there might be a couple of songs that never get played or never get rehearsed out, because if, you know, every now and then, you know, Rocky will deliver a demo and it's like, well, that song's finished. That's awesome, you know, because that's how Rocky is. He's a very prolific writer, and he just has great stuff. I mean, So I mean, if you're into the stuff we've been doing, you know, definitely the last several years, you know, Rocky's had a heavy hand in all of that writing,
right,
and everything. So, but yeah, no, I really, really like how Ghost Thief came out, and you know, for me right now, it would be hard to figure out, hard to spend as much time as we did on that on a new one. So
yeah.
How it goes, but other than that, you know, I would love to do more outside of Living Sacrifice. I've never, you know, done stuff outside of it, just because,
like, I didn't have non-metal time.
What's that?
Like non-metal type of stuff.
Correct. Yeah, probably non-metal, more in the rock vein, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Just
not singing, more just playing guitar, and everything.
Right on.
If there's definitely one thing I wish I could sing. I'm just a screamer. That's really,
really
what I do. Yeah. The
I mean, I haven't heard anything from you, obviously.
Some of the singing that's on, the Hammering Process is me.
Okay.
Some of it's Matt Putman and me singing together. Some of it's Arthur, but like there's a good couple of songs where I'm just singing, and I'm not good at it. It's not my thing. So
you're not like a pop vocalist.
man, I'm not a singer at all. I'm just not really at all. It takes a lot for me to hit that note, and there's just no way I would ever be able to do it live.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, I mean, if you give me, you know, an hour in the studio, I might be able to get a line out or something like that with a lot of practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I'm a screamer, and I'm so much more a fan right now, at least, of singers, actual singers, and harmonizers, you know, people that can sing and harmonize, you know, like I mentioned Alice in Chains before, I think their last two albums are great because of how they harmonize together still and everything. And, yeah, so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think musically I'm much more interested in playing and writing and having somebody else come in and actually sing.
That's,
because I can't do it.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's a good segue. I think I think it's time for us to...
He loves his segues.
I think it's time for us to unleash our news, Bruce. What do you think?
Go for it.
All right. Well, I want your help doing this. If anybody stuck around to the end of this, us here at As the Story Grows has been working pretty hard on something.
No, wait. You're going to edit out all the boring stuff we just went through, right?
I'm actually going to skip everything. This is just a quick two-minute announcement about the cover song. Yeah. Yeah, you were a terrible guest, dude. But, coming up, today is the 16th, and this episode is going to be, and this chapter is going to be airing on the 20th. So everybody who's listening, this coming Thursday on the 24th is a 25th anniversary of Rust in Peace from Megadeth. And that came out on the 24th in 1990. And I came up with this idea to record Holy Wars because it's one of the best metal songs ever. Bruce, am I right?
It's a great metal song.
Okay.
Have you seen that Onion article?
No.
About Rust in Peace?
No.
Oh, it's the greatest thing ever. Have you seen it, Steven?
I don't think so.
An Onion article?
Yes.
No.
Here's the gist of the Onion article.
Go.
And I'm sorry I keep interrupting you.
No, I don't do it. I don't care. Go ahead.
No, I got to hear this. This is great.
So the Onion posts a story, and basically the headline is, people continue to create art even though Rust in Peace has already been made.
I saw that. I did see that. I didn't realize it was an Onion article. I didn't read it. I just saw the title.
Dude, you gotta read it. Come on.
Okay, I will.
That's
I will.
That's a fantastic headline. I love
I'll put the link. I'll put the link in the show notes of this episode.
It was kind of like basically saying, yeah, everything after this should just like not exist because this is a piece of perfect art.
Yep. There you go.
So their Onion is stating that they're fans of the record. They're not
apparently they like that, but you know, I mean,
it wasn't sarcasm.
I'm sure there's some in there because it's the Onion. Yeah.
Well, yeah. They're trying to say that they're fans.
But within the context of it or the pretext of it, there's definitely some admiration because I mean, seriously, I mean, who's gonna say that Rust in Peace is a bad album?
No one.
I've only listened to so much of that. I think Rust in Peace is the only one I liked from them.
That's a popular
piece. Peace Sells was all right, I think, too. But yeah, I didn't like that. Hey me, now meet the real me. I like all that stuff. I didn't get it.
Yeah, that kind of lost me too.
Yeah, Countdown got a little weird.
Yeah. But Peace Sells. Oh. Anyways, yeah. Travis.
Yeah.
Finish.
Yeah. Go on.
So I came up with this idea to cover Holy Wars, and I had Alex Kennis, the guy that I was with in Solemn Wars.
This isn't the White Cross Holy Wars.
No. Yeah. No, we're going to cover White Cross next year. But the, because I know there's a lot of listeners out there love White Cross, right? I came up with this idea to record Holy Wars. Alex from Solemn Wars did all the guitars and the bass. I recorded the drums for it. And Mr. Bruce agreed to do the vocals. So if anybody stuck around this long, there's going to be a surprise coming out on Thursday on the 24th on the 25th anniversary of the album. Me, Alex, and Bruce Fitzhugh are going to give you a cover of Holy Wars. It's very hard on it.
It is a lot of fun. It's super fun.
Your vocals are so unbelievably not Dave Mustaine.
Hey, man, I told you. I said...
I'm excited.
I said, you know it's going to sound like me singing.
Right.
Holy Wars, right?
Right. And my requirement was, no problem, just don't sound like Dave Mustaine.
Yeah, I think it sounds like an improvement already from how you're describing it.
Dude, with all due respect to Dave, given the choice, I was a Megadeth guy. Ooh, not a popular opinion, but I mean, not to take anything away from Ride the Lightning or Master or Justice or anything, but dude, so far so good. So what? Peace Sells, Rust in Peace.
Those are the records for sure.
That was my trilogy, yeah, man.
Anyway,
there you go. There's the big announcement. I've been working really hard on that.
Well, I just have to say, and I have to give you guys props, you Travis and Alex, that song is not easy.
No, it's not an easy song.
And I just don't know too many people that could have covered it, you know, like that.
So, thank you. Thank you.
Cool. That's it.
You guys.
That's a big compliment coming from you, man.
So, yeah, man. I'll take it.
I'm excited to hear it.
That reminds me of I don't know if this has to make the air, but that reminds me of the time when Living Sacrifice was playing in Cafe Baraka.
And oh, wow.
It was the one show that Lance never played because he apparently got the death flu. And he almost,
yes.
Remember?
Yes, I do remember.
You guys called me to play drums that night.
And that's amazing.
I was in college, and I missed the call. I got home.
Oh, that's two fails for you, man.
I know. I went to stupid microprocessors class. Probably failed the test
no
anyway.
Wonder.
I know.
Wonder.
And my mom was like, some band called for you. And I was like, my band? And she was like, no, some band called. And I was like, I don't understand what you mean. So I got on the horn with somebody. I can't remember who it was. I just remember it wasn't a member of Crutch. It was a mutual friend of ours or something. I got on the horn with them, and they were like, dude, where were you? Lance couldn't play tonight. They called you to play. Who called me to play? Living Sacrifice. I was like, shut up. What happened? And I guess Putman filled in for like six or seven songs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Matthew played like – I think we picked out like six or seven that he felt comfortable doing.
I blew it.
And,
Travis,
I'm putting this
all in a frame and framing it on your wall.
We did the best we could, but I remember that you know, obviously because Lance couldn't do it, but he was so sick. But also, I also remember that the promoter did not want to pay us the full amount because we couldn't play a full set, and that was a bum out. And I basically went to town with him and argued with him because, man, I was, like I said before, I was kind of like, I was dead serious on the business side of things, and I was just like not having it.
Sure. Did you get your money?
I did.
Good. Did you beat it out of him?
Pull out that baseball bat with the spikes in it.
No, it never came to that. It never came to that, but he definitely disagreed on ethical principles, and he made it clear and blah blah blah, and I was just like, that all sounds fine and dandy, but if you've never been on tour and not sure if you're gonna make it to the next gig, you know, because you know you got to put gas in the vehicle or whatever,
sure, right,
and you just can't know. And I was like, you know, what we did tonight, you know, like we did our best, man.
Yeah.
You know, we've never played without Lance. And
yeah,
tonight,
I mean,
we did.
Clearly you would have played longer if you could have.
Yeah, totally.
You know? It's not like you were just tired and saying, I don't care about this gig, I'm going home.
We could have played Reborn and Hammering Process front to back in a row if I wouldn't have went to stupid class. Because I knew him. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
To be a masseuse.
Wah, wah. No.
Wasn't that what you went for?
No,
man?
I was in, I remember. I was in,
well,
I was
did
in,
that for
a
baton, right?
I was in, I did.
I didn't make that up.
I got certified to be a massage therapist. Electronic technology. I remember. I the only reason I went to class that night is because I knew I had to drive and go fail a microprocessors test because I wasn't ready for it.
Oh, man.
And I was like, well, I gotta go. I gotta show up and take my punch on the chin because I've been going to all these shows and being a bum lately. And that's I got home that night. And I was like, the one night, the one time I did the right thing. Duh! You know.
So where was that again? Where was that at?
Cafe Baraka's in.
It's Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
Is that right? Lebanon, PA?
Lebanon, PA, yeah.
It's funny, we did not get up to the northeast, like, very often, except for that part of Pennsylvania.
Cause,
I feel like we played Lancaster area.
Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, Lebanon, just a lot, like maybe, I don't know, six or seven times in our, you know, career.
Yeah. You guys played Whitehall. You played Club Carrigan's with us. That's in Whitehall. That's Allentown. You played Croc Rock. We're a metal area.
We played that infamous show with you guys in Long Island, New York in 2001 where the headliner went on, which was you, went on before the dinky little opening band, which was us, because we got lost in the city and couldn't get there. And then so like the main show happened and then we came in at the end and played. It was
all no way.
There was like 20 people that stayed because you guys already played.
Oh.
We were so excited. We were like, we're going to play with Living Sacrifice. It's going to be hundreds of kids.
What is the club that has associated with CI Records that was right there?
The Chameleon Club.
Chameleon, yeah, we played there.
Yeah, yeah.
Several
times.
Yeah,
that's like right here. That's our main venue here.
Yeah, I remember that place.
Bruce, thanks for your time, man. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad we got to talk. We said we're going to try to lay off the Living Sacrifice stuff and just talk music, but can't help but talk about some of the old stuff.
Well, I wasn't informed with that information. I kept bringing it back up.
No, that's cool. I mean, I feel like
I didn't know.
Everybody's question. I mean, everybody's question is different. What Travis was just like, you know, it'd be cool to do, you know, talk about other things besides, you know,
sure.
What I've already talked about, you know, through Mark's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep referring to Mark's podcast, which is called Never Was.
Yes.
I never was a metalhead. Sorry, man. It just never hit me. Okay.
I'll put links up to that episode too, because I think people can go listen to those and kind of get a background, because you talked about everything from like your upbringing, and you compared your childhood to the Heavy Metal Parking Lot movie. And
have you seen that?
Oh, I remember that.
I've seen YouTube clips of it. Yeah, I'm aware of what it is. I have a hard time sitting through it.
it's not something you want to sit through. It's pretty pathetic, actually. But
yeah.
That is literally like when I watch it, it's like, I know that guy. I mean, not literally, but it's like,
right. Yeah.
Those are the people I hung out with.
Yeah.
And yep. It's a miracle that I got out of that. It's just so weird.
Yeah, it is.
We were idiots.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You got it, man. Thanks again. I really appreciate the time. And, be in touch, everybody. Pay attention to your subscription feed on Thursday. Got a little present in there for you.
All right, guys.
It's been real, man. Good talking to you.
Good to talk to you, Steven. Thanks so much, Travis.
Got it, buddy. Take care, Bruce.
Take care.
Good night.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.